Hello. Before the podcast for The Brave Little Toaster Goes to Mars gets going proper, I should point out that there are a few glitches on the recording that I couldn't do anything about, but it's mostly fine. So hopefully it won't be too difficult to understand what we're talking about on the occasional moment where some little bit of word gets cut, but I think it's fine. It's too good a film to pass up a conversation about, so here it is. Hello, you're listening to Spoiler.
Build.
Film.
Conversation. Hooray!
Yay!
So, gang, we're all here. Thank you. Thank you. Settle down in the back. So, gang, we're here again to talk about a film. I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me is Abigail Bain.
Hello.
Anthony Evans.
How's it going?
It's fine, thanks. And Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And I picked this week's film, guys, as you well know. And this week's film is The Brave Little Toaster Goes to Mars. It's the third in the Brave Little Toaster franchise, because, everyone needs one of those. And we've already talked about in a spoiler film, some of us anyway, the first Brave Little Toaster. I decided we should skip over the second one, because it's a bit meh. The Brave Little Toaster and the gang save a bunch of pets. Blah, blah, blah. Not interesting. Going to Mars, on the other hand, that's amazing. And it is incredibly weird as films go. So, had anyone seen this before?
Nope.
No.
No.
So it was only a rewatch for me.
Yeah, the only reason it was even on my kind of radar was because you mentioned it had a sequel once, and that was about it.
Yeah, well, it has two. We are skipping over Brave Little Toaster to the Rescue. We may do it one day, probably not if this doesn't go well, but it's just about the first film, just to cover it. Some appliances that have been neglected in a house travel across the country to get back to their owner, and they come into all kinds of problems like woodland critters and junk shops and loads of stuff, like weird junkyard problems as well. They almost get crushed. There's lots of drama on the road. The second one, the toaster and his friends save some pets. And in this one, he's living happily with his owner, but obviously they end up having reasons to go to Mars. Oh, can someone.
That's a great way to like that's an abridged version of the story.
Yeah. Well, we can someone give the details of who did this? 'Cause they have to be held responsible.
Okay, according to IMDb, well, this was made in 1998, which is like 11 years after the first one. Directed by Robert C. Ramirez, written by Willard Carroll. It's actually got a reasonable cast.
Oh, yeah.
It's got Deanna Oliver, who has been the voice of the toaster the whole time. It's got Fyvish Finkel, Farrah Fawcett, which is a terrible joke. I don't know if they cast her as the Fawcett. Like, I don't know if they
Oh,
sought her
you
out.
know they did.
I would like to think that they hadn't thought about her at all. They hadn't even contacted her. And then they found out that she really liked it. The Brave Little Toaster, so they went, we have to put her in. But she could be a Fawcett. She's a Fawcett.
It also has Wayne Knight, Dennis Nedry, Newman. It's got a cast of people who like you if you watch cartoons, whether kids'
Yeah.
cartoons or adult cartoons, you recognize a lot of the voices in it.
Yeah.
But the summary is Thomas N. Dish's underwhelming sequel, based on the book sequel, has our
That's
heroes
the
zooming off.
description.
Yeah.
Yep.
Already evaluating it.
Yeah.
Please go on.
On the has our hero zooming off to, of all places, Mars. That's it. That's all it gives us.
Well, it's kind of obvious of all places. It's like, that's not coming as a surprise. It's called The Brave Little Toaster Goes to Mars. Of all places, he doesn't go to Mars. He goes to Saturn. That would elicit that type up. Well, for one, I don't think they've covered enough of what happens, but that's what we're here to do.
Oh, actually, one person who's in it, who I forgot to mention, DeForest Kelly who was Bones in the original Star Trek. This was his final acting role.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Who did he voice?
He was the Viking 1 satellite probe thing.
Oh, right. Who voiced the calculator? Because I think Ollie was particularly excited about it when I said we were doing this.
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah, he was in Memento.
Right.
He was in Groundhog Day. I think he was...
He was the dude who stepped in the puddle and...
Yeah, and Bill Murray punches him in the face.
He was also in Accidental Hero, which we did as a podcast of.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, so there's a lot of extra appliance characters in this, and other non-appliance characters to some extent. It kind of, adds without adding anything in quality, I would say. But, I'm sure we'll cover that. So, that's the details. Expectations, I mean, I wanted to just blow all you guys away with how weird this is as a sequel. And that was it, really. I just thought, this is so odd. Why did they... Like, it's a weird story anyway, appliances coming to life. What's that about? But we can all run with that. We've seen Toy Story subsequently, so we're used to things coming to life and having faces where they shouldn't. But this doesn't seem to understand how to do storytelling and sense. So, Anthony, you were one of the people originally reviewing the first film. So, what did you think? What were you expecting?
Yeah, it's the first one was one of my childhood classics that I always liked. Because it was kind of more aimed at both kind of like more of a family film where there's a kind of ambivalence to the whole thing, which is quite melancholy. I think you put it once, Rich, and I really liked that about the film. And coming into this one, the only thing I really knew was that you'd seen it, and you had a big reaction to it. I wasn't particularly sure whether it was terrible or good. But I was coming in thinking it was probably going to be quite bad, but maybe in a funny way.
That's how I'd put it. That's what I thought, is this is terrible. But I kind of love how baffled I was. Abby, you also, I think, were in on the review for The Brave Little Toaster, the first podcast of, the first time. The first one. Happy.
Yes, I was a participant in the first Brave Little Toaster show, but I do not remember the film or the show at all in any description.
I remember your reaction watching it the first time. You couldn't really get into it that much because, being an adult and having not had any nostalgia for it. But I think we'd, kind of coaxed you around to thinking it wasn't rubbish, at least. But if you don't remember, you don't remember. You've got this one to remember now, so...
Oh, I'm so lucky.
Is it a potential other one to do as well, guys?
Mm-hmm.
So, Jamie, you hadn't seen the first one, so this is completely without context, which I don't think makes that much difference. I don't think it would make sense if you knew what had happened previous.
I know about The Brave Little Toaster, and I know a lot of people hold it up as like a childhood favourite of a certain generation. And I've seen bits of it, and it looks like I would happily watch it now, like with a kid who wanted to see it. And it looks like the kind of thing that you could enjoy as an adult as well, because it looks like a well-made, kind of fairly heartfelt, cute kids film from what I've seen.
Mm.
And it looks like it's got enough of like a dark bent to it that an adult could enjoy it. Like it's like an early precursor to Toy Story.
Yeah, it's got some creepy moments, which work, and it's a musical, so it's kind of light and frothy.
Yeah, and that's the impression I get. It looks like it's there in those 80s films with, like, An American Tale and The Secret of Nim and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What I was expecting from the sequel was kind of like a Return of Jafar kind of quality. Where...
So brilliant and probably the best sequel to Aladdin. Definitely better than The Prince of Thieves.
No, what he means is this film definitely has a case of Disney direct-to-video sequel-itis.
Well, no, because the thing is, because when I was a kid, I was a stupid kid, so I loved Return of Jafar.
Yes, And I did, but I'm not stupid like you, Jamie. I love it because it's brilliant. Anthony is wrong to love it, not love it, and to prefer the other one.
Does everything really have to come back to the Return of Jafar?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
But, like, that film, if I remember, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but it looks significantly cheaper than Aladdin, because it was, but it still doesn't look appalling, and that's what I was expecting from this. I wasn't expecting this to look as appalling as it did. This is like the cheapest. This looked worse than a lot of like 90s Saturday morning cartoons.
I must admit, once I found out, which was about 10 minutes ago, that it was from 1998, I was surprised because it does look awful.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and the whole, it was a bit, like the first one was a bit outdated with these appliances that are slight, the whole idea is they're a little bit out of date and therefore not as important to a modern person with modern appliances. So now that this was in 1998, it's like, what, really? This vacuum cleaner? Yeah. When are we going to get to the Dyson Revolution? Which may or may not be the name of a Dyson. I'm not a big fan of those Hoovers, but that's besides the point. There's only one Hoover the face I like. No, actually, there's two. There's the one in this film and Henry the Hoover. Doesn't matter. Hoovers aside, it is a cheap sequel. And we won't discuss Aladdin sequels as comparisons anymore because I feel me and Anthony will have another falling out over it. But it is a cheap sequel to a reasonable, if a little weird film, yeah. Okay, how did we all get on with it?
I think we should state, like, at this point, that this is, I don't know whether it was intended to at least appeal somewhat to some of the adults who might end up watching this, but this is truly, like, a kid's film, if you know what I mean.
Which is weird, because it tries to reference science. Yeah. Like, it has Einstein references and slightly, like, you know, kids don't know about the details of the stuff that happens on Mars. Do they really know about, like...
That ties in to my main crux of a problem with this film is that it does science that doesn't make sense, which is common to kids' movies and I accept, but then at the same time, it's quoting unified field theory. And that is upsetting to me.
It kind of mocks science by accident.
Don't give lectures on Einstein's theories when you flew to Mars in a laundry basket with a fan.
This is the key point, I think, is the not so much the reason to go to Mars, though it's a compelling one. It's the how they figure out to go to Mars that I like.
Popcorn in the microwave and a ceiling fan.
Yeah, you need a laundry basket. Everyone can travel to, well, they can send their appliances to Mars. If you just have some cheesy popcorn, I think it was. That's important. Yeah, it was. Although apparently cheesy popcorn and the organic hair and claws of a Christmas top, Christmas tree topper.
God.
Either of those fools, laundry basket, microwave, ceiling fan, calculator, and possibly the help of an ancient supercomputer that you made friends with in the sequel, but we haven't talked about, so I guess you guys have no idea why they got help from a supercomputer via some weird foreign internet.
I got the, like, some of it was probably from a previous sequel, because that's where Ratso was from as well, right? The rat.
Yeah. There's a rat who's sort of an... They ditch him in the main adventure because, you know, he's from the rubbish second film that's not so terrible, it's hilarious, not so good, it's a classic. Like, Ratso's there, but he's off to the side, and they have the supercomputer helping them because they helped him in the second film. But that's all it takes to get to Mars, and it doesn't take long. It takes
overnight.
Yeah, no, they don't even
They go there and back overnight. Yeah,
the whole thing, one night. So yeah, it happens through the course of a song from some balloons.
I have to, like, before I even get into anything, I have to talk about the songs in this film. Because, and especially the first one when they bring the baby home.
That I wanted to end my life. Yeah. When I was going.
I just wanted to walk off into the desert and never come back. While that was playing, like, it was just the most saccharine.
Yes, that's the word.
Oh, it was awful. And it served, they were all pretty bad, but
it only served the purpose to speed along us caring about the baby. Because essentially it's about the master and mistress, which is a very weird term to call your eyes. But they turn up, Rob's back. He's the kid from the first film and the adult owner of the toaster and the posse. And he's had a child with blah, blah, blah. He's got a girlfriend from the first film. He settled down by the second film. And now he's married and is ready for kids in the third. It's a nice kind of trilogy in that sense. And he's had a new child they're bringing home for the first time. And, yeah, that child, we have to start to like it because it's the reason all of the appliances go to Mars.
A lot of the jokes about living and having a baby and the attitudes towards this baby makes me think that whoever was in charge of this recently had one and was all goo-goo about babies, Totally lacking in sleep and life.
It's just this bizarre hallucinatory interpretation of how much you love your newborn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because initially it gets a frosty reception from at least Blanky, who is the loved, like, innocent one of the group of appliances that are friends and alive. And he's like, oh, can't they send it back? I want to be the loved one. And then they have to show us that Blanky is the perfect one for the baby because, you know, if a baby needs anything, it's an electric blanket. Smidge dangerous, but a blanket, sure.
Blanky really kind of creeped me out in this film. Like, yeah, in the first one, he's, you know, he's a blanket and he comes off kind of childish and it kind of makes sense that he'd be a bit more needy because that's what he's about.
Yeah.
But here, he's really needy and comes off as kind of stalkery.
When he said the thing about sending the baby back, I was like, man, is this going to get all, like, sinister?
No, it's okay, because we had an appalling, saccharine montage of the most horrible... It was just
It goes on and on and on for so long as well.
It's so banal as well. It's just like... Look, here's the baby playing with a toaster. Here's the baby wrapped in a blanket.
Which is not safe. That's not safe.
Why but Rob loves the toaster, and he grew up loving the toaster, so it's normal for him to be obsessed with appliances. There's a lot of subtext to talk about, but I think that'll come up a bit later. But yeah, this saccharine song is terrible. Like, this is the worst one of all of them, and they're all poor. There's like a song that plays on the radio about making toast, which is, I just think, a pop song. They thought, oh, this will fit, because it's old-fashioned like them, and it's about toast. But there is one good song, and it's by the Balloons. Does you guys like the Balloon song?
No.
I will agree that it's the least offensive of the songs, but that doesn't make it good or relevant in the slightest.
I think what they were trying to do is, in the first film, they go to a junkyard and there's all these cars talking about their lives before they were scrapped. And I think this one is like, what happens to balloons once they're gone from the owners? And they're apparently balloons can last eternally floating in space. They don't just pop or deflate. That would be sad. They go off and have adventures in space and sing to appliances about traveling and their past lives. They decided to bore us with their stories of... So I was in a rodeo and someone let me go.
One that came from Woodstock and he was a hippie.
Sounded like a rubbish Bob Dylan.
Yeah, his nozzle at the wrong end.
But it's to look cool, so he'd have a beard and stuff. I thought he looked cool, that one. They were all just kind of themed for some reason. Because, you know, all balloons are themed. But that was... Okay, so not the worst, a.k.a. passable... And then pretty much all the other songs are just, what was the point of that? There's like a duel song between a giant refrigerator and toaster at one point, which is sort of getting elected as the supreme leader of class.
That was when a bad film just went really weird. I didn't know what was happening at that point.
Well, you know, it's a journey. Okay, the MacGuffin to get us to Mars essentially is this newborn kid. They've made friends with all the appliances or what? It's had boring montages where they dress it up like a sailor because all kids have to be dressed up like sailors at some point. I know I have, but that kid then gets abducted by, well, you know, it's abducted in a sort of alien way because a hearing aid that's been left in the drawer of the kitchen is trying to communicate with something, and the baby's abducted instead of the hearing aid that belongs to Einstein and is left in the junk drawer. I like the idea of a junk drawer and having appliances that were forgotten, because these guys were initially forgotten in the first film. What did you guys make of Einstein's hearing aid?
He was voiced by Fivish Finkel, which I thought was quite, like, how did these old actors and comedians, I don't know, I guess once you get to a certain age, you're out of touch, and especially after Toy Story and things like that, which this came after Toy Story, which is amazing to me,
mm-hmm.
that, like, someone, you know, who was a star back in the golden age would see something like Toy Story and then get a script like this, and because they're getting old and they're out of touch, they think, yeah, this is another one. I'll be in this one and it'll be as good.
Oh, come
and
on. Then... if you were asked to voice Einstein's hearing aid, you'd be like, yeah. But I don't know why Einstein lived in the same house as Rob and his wife. Like, previously, he had to come to, you know, from Germany because of, you know, the Nazis, and come and do science in America. And he needed a hearing aid. And,
apparently he needed two hearing aids.
Yes, we'll get to that. So anyway, like, the hearing aid is communicating with something in space, and it ends up, the baby somehow gets out of his crib because, you know, it's very agile, gets
actually
abducted.
That's one thing that I didn't understand. At the end of the film, when, spoilers, when the baby gets back home, he walks, and Rob and his wife go, oh, he's walking. He's been walking the whole film, including with them before he left.
Mm.
Why did they forget in the night that they've not seen him?
Well, it's quite a strange night, considering they sleep through it all. Their baby gets abducted, goes to Mars, and is rescued by the guy's kitchen equipment. And, like, you know, a lot of stuff happens. And it comes, you know, like Abby mentioned, I think it all happens in one night, so... They've been neglected, and a rat has been in the crib of the child.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what a horrible nightmare to happen to your newly born baby. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, let's just, you know, get to Mars and talk about that, because they do it via elaborate means, but they get there quite quickly, considering it would take humans many years, possibly.
That, yeah, it would, and that's the other thing. They get there in under an hour. And yet they talk about how far they went. Like,
they keep name-dropping how many miles, how many light years, rather. And it's a massive, massive number.
Yeah.
Maybe that balloon song did drag for a lot longer than we realised.
I felt like I'd travelled several million miles when I got to that point.
But, well, actually, before they got to Mars, there's other characters they add for seemingly no reason. You mentioned the Fawcett, who was aptly named. Or aptly voiced. But they have a Fawcett and Tap, as if they're trying to, like, reference the Chip and Chip the Cup from Beauty and the Beast or something. And they have a calculator. Oh, the calculator goes with them, in fairness. So that's okay. But they just add... on the microwave, they invent to be a sort of modern rival... I don't know. They seem to have a beef with a, you know...
They build him up as some kind of antagonist, and then they just go, ah, he's all right, though. And he just becomes one of the gang without any antagonism or anything.
There's just something else weird about that as well. I thought the trope of the movie series in general was that individual objects that sort of have a whole identity of their own can be personified.
Yeah.
So the fact that a tap and a faucet got personified just felt wrong to me, because then you feel like, oh, so anything can be.
But not everything, because that would be animator's nightmare, having to bring everything. Because you've got to have some inanimate things that don't come to life. I don't know, it seems to be electronical equipment. Stuff that's somehow powered can come to life. But
that's
not
the thing. A tap and a faucet aren't.
Yeah, who knows.
And
well, maybe they got a...
Neither is a Christmas fairy.
That's true. Not, although it might light up and therefore need power. No, it doesn't light up, though. Yeah. There's no rules. There's just, if we can whack a face on it, it can come to life.
Yeah.
They also have this ceiling fan, which has a tremendously awesome voice, sort of husky woman's voice. And it has almost nothing to do with the whole story, because it's just, it can't move around.
But weirdly, she is the character that kind of comes full circle. She actually has, yeah. Even though she has only got like three lines, she actually has like a story arc, and she's like the only one, pretty much.
She learns to see things from another perspective, quite literally.
That's Carol Channing. She's like old school actress, comedy actress. She has a great voice.
It is. And it's a shame because the fan is basically ditched as soon as they get on Mars because we didn't think of animating legs or something on it. Like, it's just too awkward to trundle about easily, like a lamp and a radio and a vacuum and a blanket. Which the blanket, it's always cuddling up with a baby, fair enough. But it's just smearing itself on the kitchen floor all the time. It's just an unhygienic blanket. So on Mars, we first have, and then to add more characters where they weren't needed, we have them all meet the various satellites that have either crashed or deliberately been put on Mars.
Yeah.
And, I mean, nothing. Go on.
And then there's the Viking one, then DeForest Kelly.
The big orange dude who's.
Yeah. And then they introduce the Christmas tree fairy by saying, oh yeah, someone put her on the satellite as a joke. What?
Well, maybe someone's, like, the people who sent satellites to Mars to do all science and that, you know, they've got kids or like putting tat in space. Because in a way, I'd be like, oh well, no matter what I do with my life, I'll always have a piece of my tat on Mars.
But yeah, I guess.
Abby, I think me and you were talking about the fairy and, like, speculating, was it that whether or not there was actually a fairy Christmas tree topper put Viking 1? That seems like something that could have oddly been factually checked.
Well, given that they did enough research to know that Viking 1 was on Mars and that they researched the unified field theory, a little tidbit of trivia like that.
I don't know how much of that was in the book that this was based on.
Oh, that's true. I didn't realise that there were books, because you think this sort of thing is just made up for animation.
That's what I thought. Like, the first one was, they're all based on books, which surprised me. I can understand the first one.
Yeah.
But did Thomas Dish write a book this bad that then got turned into this?
Like, yeah, what happened? That's a weird one. Well, the covers look really interesting. There's much more sinister cover on the book of this film. Like, the first one's just a kind of weird, oh, they put the toaster's face on the side. I see. That's kind of all you get from the cover of the other book, the first film. But anyway, there's a Christmas tree topper that is alive. And in Viking 1, the big orange satellite that's... There's kind of a point made that throughout the film about humans ditching appliances, this time particularly on Mars. And it seems to be saying something about, oh, why do humans make things and then have them come alive and then ditch them as if they're nothing?
Yeah, there's moments like that during the film. I think, like, here, like, we have the Viking 1, who was essentially made to be abandoned. And then we have all the other appliances that we find later, and they are all made to be, like, abandoned and broken. And even the balloons is a kind of interesting kind of concept that they could have dealt with. And if it still had the kind of tone of the first film, I think it could be, you know, quite good and quite effective, but it doesn't, and it kind of drops all of their stuff.
Yeah, it's just half-baked. It's like it's throwing that idea in there because it's consistent with the first film, but they're not really doing anything with it.
Mm. If all these appliances were animals, we'd be being horrible, obviously. Like, there's been animals that's gone into space that we don't care about. You know, there's been chimps and dogs and even geckos have died in space. That's harsh because they're alive and they genuinely are alive, and it's sad. And if it was about humans and we were neglecting humans, it would understand. But are we meant to feel sympathy for it? I mean, am I meant to be feeling sorry for my laptop? Am I boring it to death by recording on it? It's like, am I useful? Alive that I have to care when I put them down. Like, if the inanimate we have to care about as well as, like, trees and nature and animals.
It's actually creepier for me thinking about what my stuff would do when I wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough toys coming to life and having fun without you, but yeah, you know, the boring, banal appliances.
Yeah, a lamp.
Yeah, sorry, all the objects in my room, if you come to life, so they're scared now. The other way this theme comes up of abandonment is through all of the appliances that are already on Mars, because I didn't know this, but in, was it the 50s or earlier that these Wonderlux appliances were made? They feel like they're the 50s, but it seems an evil German scientist did something or other.
He made them with designed obsolescence, which...
Because he's a capitalist pig or something.
Which comes up in the, like, that phrase or a very similar phrase. And I'm thinking, so far, this film has had a very, like, kiddie tone. Yeah. And now you're talking, along with Unified Theory, you're talking about designed obsolescence. What kid is going to keep paying attention when stuff like this starts to come up?
It reminds me of a set of books, actually, that I read when I was younger. Let me just check the title. Yeah, The Time and Space of Uncle Albert.
Right.
And it was about this little girl whose uncle was Albert Einstein, and the learning and adventures she'd have with him. And they pitched that perfectly, where they went into some complex science, but explained enough of it simply enough for it to be understood.
Yeah.
But the brave little tortoise goes to Mars doesn't explain it in a way that adults can understand it.
It just throws the phrase around, because when it comes to the point where it actually needs to be explained, they pan away and like mute that part of the film while another conversation carries on.
But you know, the general premise, the reason why Mars is inhabited by robots that aren't just the ones we sent there on purpose to walk around and take pictures, but also appliances from possibly the 50s that were designed to break so people would have to buy more, is because some evil capitalist scientist, German science-y guy, made them. They all realized they were designed to break and decided to build a rocket and fly to Mars and escape man's tyranny some way.
Yeah. I guess so.
Live in peace without humans, which admirable if we did design them to break, but a bit odd, because presumably they'll all just break on Mars.
Yeah, that's
they seem fine. But that's not really where it ends, is it?
No, because this is where the film just goes so weird, because I don't know if they were trying to do the, oh, we should appeal to adults too thing, so let's have an election.
They have to introduce the supreme leader of Mars, who is a gigantic fridge.
But in line with what Jamie just said, though, if they think that any adult is actually interested in an election, then they're very profoundly wrong.
Yeah.
And if it's not for the adults, again, profoundly wrong.
Yeah. Elections, they're always fun. They would be fun if you sung and danced through them all. But, yeah, elections aren't interesting for anyone. Yeah, so adults don't really care about an election. But why adults aren't interested, because, I mean, if they sat through the kid montage at the beginning and didn't fall asleep, they got to the point where they went, oh, tell me more about rockets that can be powered by popcorn. Like, that's already happened. So adults aren't taking this film seriously to suddenly get involved. But this giant fridge guy who is some kind of... They have daily elections on Mars. All these appliances have daily elections to elect a supreme leader who always wins because he's giant and bullies them or something.
It's like they love him or something. Like he's sucking them in and they believe everything and they love him. And then him and the toaster have a song off. Like they have an electoral race in, like, just pared down to one rubbish song, another rubbish song.
Yeah.
And it basically boils down to humans are bad. No, they're not. Humans are good. Okay, you win. That's all that happens.
That's the point where it becomes very obviously about institutionalized slavery.
Yeah. You have to love your owners and do everything they ask you.
They love us, even though the first film was literally about Rob. Not because, you know, fed up, he moved house, ditched all of his loved appliances and went to live somewhere else. I don't know why they didn't sell. They, I mean, they did sell the house, but it is about him ditching his even favourite appliances and moving on with his life. And yet, Toaster and the gang love their owners. And it is kind of like the bad guy has the more legitimate point. We don't care if they're alive, and we should. And Toaster's like, no, but they love us the way they chuck us out and send us to pawn shops when they're tired of us. Abby, you had a theory about... You think this gets to a deeper subtext about institutionalized... What did you call it?
Institutionalized slavery is what they have. But I think it appears to be about people just accepting their place in the world and their place in the pecking order.
Yeah, it has got it's got an almost like British class system thing going on.
It does, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
It just made me very uncomfortable.
No, I thought that when they were like praising the idea of, yeah, the humans love us despite the fact that they completely neglect us.
Yeah, and the only humans in it are Rob and his wife, really. And as humans watching the film, we should all be like going, why does this toaster love us so much? I'm not particularly friendly with my toaster.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't know. I thank it when it gives me toast. Do I? No. I just eat the toast to go away. I particularly have arguments with my printer. So we're almost nemesis. If it didn't print some of the time, we would not get on half as much.
If anything, I fight with the majority of my appliances on a regular basis.
We only talk to objects when we're annoyed at them, usually.
I don't know, sometimes I pre-talk to my objects so that they do what I need them to do.
A bit of pep talk.
Yeah. Pretty much, yes.
Plus, Toaster doesn't have any experience outside of his own owner, who's particularly nice to him because he rescued him from a tip instead of going to buy some new ones. And so, Toaster and the appliances haven't been thrown out because their owner's a hoarder who doesn't chuck things out. But other people's appliances might be rubbish.
Yeah.
And these ones on Mars have been built to be rubbish eventually to be replaced.
Unrelated, something I just remembered. The human, the only other human in this that's consistently in it, the baby, the little master. Why is he in a bubble?
I think
not explained.
I think
floating in a bubble.
I think at some point they kind of make a passing comment about, oh yeah, we're keeping him in a bubble because we could do that. But that's about it.
What I find intriguing about that little flaw in the film is they don't take Ratso because he will die in space and there's no oxygen. It's like, wait, as soon as the baby got abducted and went to Mars, instead of a hearing aid, like, at that point you go, oh, well, that baby's dead as soon as it arrives. And then they can't take Ratso because they know he can't breathe. So they're aware of the problem that humans and animals can't breathe on Mars, but they're still optimistically going ahead with the plan to save what is definitely a dead baby. But luckily, Bubble saves him. And they can pass things into the bubble like milk and blankets.
Yeah, it doesn't even have the rules of a bubble.
It's like the one in The Prisoner. It works like the bubble in The Prisoner. It must do.
He sticks his hand through it, out the to touch.
It would be
the fridge.
Funny if it popped, wouldn't it? Just, oh no! Quickly, someone get one of those toasters with a bubble-making appliance on the side.
I just remembered something else.
Go on.
Military toasters.
Yeah. And they don't come up. They're not really a threat. They turn up with rockets sticking out of them. I don't know why they were built. Do you think they were built for people who wanted a defense system and hot crumpets?
This was why I bring it up. Of all the things, I do not understand.
Maybe someone just loved toast and thought the only real way to champion it was to make tanks out of toasters to force everyone to eat it.
Yeah. But none of the other appliances, like there's not like other fridges and coolers, and there's like a sewing machine that we briefly have talking, and what's the other pink appliance? An iron? Why don't they have like knives coming out of them or some? Why haven't they been mechanized for war as well? Just the toasters. The fridge is regime. Like the toasters with weapons are like the brown coats of the big fridge. He keeps them all in line and voting for him.
That you have thought about this far more than the people who made it.
I just think there was so much delicious subtext. It's almost a shame it makes no sense. Anyway, song and dance over. Toaster has won over everyone to voting for him. as the supreme leader of Mars. And he's that's how awesome a nice toaster is. He's such a noob. He votes for the other guy as well. Like, what a nice guy, or toaster. But, so, you know, radio, vacuum, Blanky, Lampy, they've all been having slight banter throughout, but they are all asked into the fridge because he wants to thank them or something.
This is when it gets really surreal, because they go into the giant fridge and there's another world in there.
Giant frozen, like a giant freezing cold ocean. And they travel, presumably for days, I don't know, in ice, in a massive ice.
Yeah, it all gets a bit other dimensions H.P. Lovecraft at this point.
It's a big freezer, but everything's scaled up wrong. Like, when they get in the laundry basket they travel in, it's when they're in there, it's huge suddenly.
Yeah. But,
like, oh, whatever. They go sailing inside the supreme leader of Mars, who is a giant fridge, across his giant frozen oceans, and eventually get to another smaller freezer, in which is another hearing aid of Einstein.
Who is actually the supreme leader the whole time and was just using the fridge as a front or something?
Some kind of puppet. He's like Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah.
He's like the man behind the curtain. The illusion is this big giant freezer, but in fact it's just Einstein's hearing aid, but who's become a megalomaniac leader of the doomed appliances of Mars. Anyone? I can't even. Like, just to explain it is to tire me out.
Yeah. Well, that's not the other big problem, because it's not as big as the whole science not science thing, but just that there's no evidence that the hearing aid controls either the tiny freezer inside the big freezer or the big freezer. And yet the freezer can be touched, and the hearing aid can feel it and be moved by it.
Yeah, we kind of skipped over that a bit. That was a really weird moment where the baby touches and it turns the fridge pink, and then it doesn't, and then you're not quite sure. It's just a weird little moment, and you're not quite sure what that was about.
The idea was that, like, he thawed him, and
yeah, that's how they try to explain it. But, like, how does touching the outside fridge affect the hearing aid on the inside?
I think it's just very heavy-handed, stupid symbolism.
Yeah.
It's the teardrop will magically bring someone back to life, or make it's just the touch of an innocent baby can affect, you know, these living appliances in an emotional way, and I don't know, thaws out the black heart of Einstein. I don't know why Einstein's hearing aid turns evil. I mean, he's not. I don't even know why he's involved in all these appliances. He's not one of the ones that's designed to break.
No, he became the hearing aid of the German scientist who made the design designed to be obsolete.
So they were just deaf buddies.
Yeah, right. I guess. Whatever. And that turned him evil. But then when the baby touched the fridge, it reminded him of the goodness of humans, and he decided to go with them back to Earth. And he was the one who sent the message to his brother hearing aid to bring him to Mars, presumably to get him to join his army of...
Oh, guys, I think we've skipped over a pretty major plot point here.
Go on.
They want to blow up the Earth.
And
that's what all this is about. It's trying to stop the
drama
blowing up the Earth because they hate all humans.
And it took this long to get to it as well.
That was so poorly done. I didn't even realize that was a plot point until they went to destroy the rocket that was aimed at Earth.
Yeah.
Because it had just washed over me at this point.
Do you want Wise to be up as well? I think there's like an evil face painted on the rocket. That rocket isn't necessarily alive. That might just be decoration. Like,
that's a good point. It's an electronic device. Why is that?
And they kill it. Yeah. But, so anyway, the hearing aid, who somehow puppeteers a giant fridge, which was made for I don't know who, because it's bigger than even like an industrial storage locker, and it's a conventional house fridge, and anyway, baby's touch equals let's chill out and stop the rocket destroying Earth, taking vengeance on these cruel masters. There's kind of something going on Like, because we're basically all appliances gods that don't care. There's definitely something almost religious about these appliances, you know, having life and then hating their maker. I don't know. It's almost worth talking about, but kind of scary. That's all averted, last minute, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Does the calculator get involved or the fairy? What do they do? They've added to our team.
This is where the fairy, like, pulls her hair off.
Oh, that's to get back, though. So how do they stop the rocket?
No, they're leaving, and the toaster and...
There's a sacrifice, isn't there?
Somebody stays behind.
Toaster jumps out or something.
The toaster and, well, the evil, shall we say, hearing aid, has just forgotten to turn it off when they're leaving. So they have to go back and turn it off. So the toaster and him just, like, dive out and go back to it.
Yeah.
Thinking that they won't ever be able to go back to Earth.
So it's a whole sort of sacrifice thing.
Mm.
But at the same time, you know that's not how it's going down.
Yeah.
A completely vapid, pointless, oh, they sacrificed themselves, but you know, yeah, no, they didn't.
Well, Toaster does get to be on Mars with a bunch of... Well, not, it's not the worst fate. If he was alone on Mars, he is with loads of other Toaster. He can get to know his own species, if that's how it works, and make friends with the iron and the whisk and the many, many ovens. You know, but then, of course, we have this pointless secondary sacrifice, which kind of rips off a fable or something. Like, there's something about people buying Christmas presents and shaving their hair off or something.
Where did all this Christmas stuff suddenly come from at the end of the film?
I don't know. It's not a Christmas film, really, is it?
No, until the last 3 minutes, where they go, oh yeah, it's going to be Christmas soon. Good thing you're with us. Now,
doll.
The
Christmas topper fairy basically gets rid of its organic hair and dress or whatever so that it can fly the microwave rocket basket thing again.
She puts the hair and the dress in the microwave and they get vaporized, and then when they get back to Earth, she still has the dress on.
I think it's an underdress.
Yeah, she has a bit of the dress. Right. The bit she gave away was the feathery part.
Jamie's just disappointed because he wanted to see what's under a Christmas topper's dress.
I was disappointed because she threw herself in the bin and I was hoping she'd stay there.
And what was great, I think you pointed it out to me, Abby, where she's been in the bin for a while before no one really cares until Rob finds her.
Yeah.
None of the other appliances are like, where's she gone? Where's the Christmas topper? No, the baby pulls her out of the bin and then they just go, oh, well, let's keep her. But your baby just pulled something out of the bin. What are you doing?
Yeah, like a dirty, bald doll. Like, let's fix this exactly how it looked like. You know, stick it on a Christmas tree.
Every time they made reference to how they never throw anything away, I just went, you really should.
Yeah.
You guys need to, you know, take some stuff back to the tip from the first movie.
Yeah. You need to have a clear out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a radio is pretty good. I mean, all the appliances we know from the first one are pretty fine. But do you need two hearing aids when you're both young adults?
Two old hearing aids that were never yours. That you're apparently still putting fresh batteries in.
And if you could prove they're Einstein, surely that would be worth selling to a museum or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, he changes the batteries. That's what's bad. Matt Rob is a mad, mad man.
He's not healthy.
And he lets his children play with, like, electrical equipment as well.
You know, yeah, he drags them all in under the Christmas tree and they just laugh.
But, yeah, the stupid fairy topper is brought back to life by given some dignity and hair and a dress. And they have their first, you know, happy Christmas all together. And,
they destroy the rocket and they get back to Earth in their basket. And there's a really weird bit where they find the ceiling fan again and she's really disappointed to be turned the other way around.
Yeah.
She wants to be left, like, facing up at the ceiling. What?
Looking up everyone's skirt or whatever. I don't know what she's into. But, that, you know, she has to go back on the wall eventually. And all in one night. And then they have Christmas and it's all, yay, bring all the appliances in because the baby's somehow fond of them like I was as a child. And this is what Christmas is about, the child playing with... children do often play with the wrong things at Christmas and ignore their toys. So, fair enough.
we forgot to mention as well that when they fly back down to Earth, there's another utterly atrocious song.
Go on.
That's it. I can't even remember how it goes. I think I've blocked it from my memory, but oh.
Anyone?
No, it's so forgettable.
I think I did the same thing.
Anyway, you know, it's like it forgets that it has to do songs like the other films. Sometimes it just goes, oh, let's get the singer to ad-lib something about toast, like, or whatever. But, yeah, you know, I feel sorry for the baby caller. What's that thing? Baby monitor? Oh.
Yeah.
The rat has to sort of tape up the mouth of the baby monitor.
Takes out his battery, which is, in their universe, pretty dark.
How does it work? Because if the baby is asleep, because basically a baby monitor, you hear a baby if it's crying. But for some reason, an alarm goes off with this one if the baby goes missing.
No, with the baby monitor, produced static in order to alarm the parent.
Because, you have like because a beep noise?
It's because the rat can do a passable baby impression.
Ah.
So.
Yeah, so that's okay for now.
Well, static may have been the wrong word, but it produced a sound that it would usually only make if there was something wrong.
But the baby monitor is alive in this world as well, so it has to be restrained all night while the baby is on Mars, for goodness sake. Maybe what can the parents do, really? You come in, your baby's missing. And then eventually a basket from the sky with appliances comes down and delivers you your baby in a bubble or whatever. On a rope. They tie a rope around the bubble as well. Just to tow it. Just whatever.
And then burn up on re-entry.
Yeah. So many questions. But it's okay because the tap, the calculator, the microwave, the toaster, the vacuum, the radio, the lamp, the blanket... the two hearing aids, the baby and the parents, and a Christmas topper are all living happily ever after, and I presumably will tell the other appliances they buy over time about the amazing story that no one else will believe, because they've all led the life of normal objects that don't travel to space. It's a good ending, right?
It ended.
Yeah.
Ah, well. What a journey. I mean, what do we say in conclusion? Is there any bits anyone else wants to mention that I may have glossed over?
It was such an ugly film as well.
That was
one of the things that stood out for me, is how poorly animated and designed it was. And yeah, like Abby said, I was shocked when I found out it came out in 98. Because, yeah. I mean, this is post-Toy Story as well.
It's the kind of script where you go, we should really come up with something better to do.
Yeah.
Like, this universal things to learn in at least the first one, maybe the second one. But it's basically about, it's a road journey, and it's friends falling out and realizing their worth. And, you know, it's about survival, and it's kind of about the times changing. And this one's just about... Humans are brilliant, and objects should be grateful of us. That's the message.
All the appliances and stuff on Mars are now left without a leader.
Yeah, the sequel is probably when, you know, Tumble Dryer like decides to man up, maybe with another tiny appliance, like a stapler inside that is controlling it and gets elected. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe the toasters with weapons are in charge on Mars now.
I would imagine they would take over.
Mm. Oh, the excuse is, though, that why we don't care about all the other appliances being left is eventually when the next generation of babies grows up, they'll colonise Mars and they'll have a bunch of rubbish products that fall apart from the 50s.
Yeah, they won't just think, what? How are these here? What happened? Who sent these up?
Were we that, like, did we have that little space for chucking stuff away? We had to send it to Mars? We had to fuel rockets to take our rubbish to Mars? Whatever. Oh, so, yeah, any, you know, final thoughts, guys? I don't know what rating. We probably presumably did. What did anyone know what we did last time? As a rating? Objects? Appliances?
I'm not sure. I will say before we get into that, though, I think... What like one of the things I found with the film was there are just too many characters, and because of that, none of them stand out or make any kind of impact.
Yeah, nobody's given any kind of, like, platform. Like, nobody's really given much of an arc. Blanky's given a brief arc that he goes through within the first 5 minutes.
There's not really a villain properly, because it's the bike riff, and then it's not. It's a fridge. And it's like, well, why don't you have what? Like, there's, you don't have to have full-blown villains. Like, in the first one, they have... They come up against obstacles, not so much villains. Like, whether it's humans trying to sell them, or... Like, there's an air conditioner that's brilliant in the first one that's kind of, you know, learns a lesson itself. And it's much more... There's a much higher quality to the little characters in the first one. Sorry, Anthony, you were saying anyway, it's just full of characters that are...
Yeah, it's just... on the ground. There's just too many of them, and I don't remember anything really that any of them did or said.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Yeah, and it's relying on us... Sorry.
There's just no impact. Especially the returning characters have, like, absolutely no impact at all, pretty much.
Yeah. Because it's all about their camaraderie in previous films and how they are as friends. And in this, they're just there to occasionally speak but add nothing.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, well, you know, these are the guys who were in the first film. We'll bring them back, but really, it'll probably be about all the other characters we introduce.
But they also have no character.
Yeah.
Oh, Abby, I remembered one of our favourite lines. The one the rat says, I think it was something like, oh, he's listening to the kind of German Einstein's hearing aid talk about something, and he's bored, and he goes, time to yawn, or something.
Time for a yawn.
Time for a yawn. And he doesn't yawn, he just goes, time for a yawn. Like, so bored I am. Abby, you must have some positive final thoughts, Abby. Come on.
Must I?
You liked that line. I know you did.
Oh, when have I ever let a film off the hook for having a good line?
Earth Girls Are Easy?
That is... That's a time capsule. That's different. That's like looking through a portal into the 80s.
It is. Go on. Anyway. you must have some thoughts.
I don't know. It's just so... If they hadn't have been so... If there hasn't been such a schism over the science in this, I think I could have just accepted it for some childish nonsense. But they so ruined it for me by saying, oh, we know real science, but we're going to ignore it.
Yeah. If it had taught us something, it would have been okay that it was a bit stupid.
It's like dangling the car keys of a Mercedes in front of someone and then giving them the car keys to a total beta.
An actual living beater that beat eggs. You don't even get to drive a rubbish car. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. What shall I say? I don't know. I thought it was the most surreal, baffling thing I've seen in a long time. And I kind of love how it just... Every new thing they add is like, what? Well, like, you cannot guess what is coming next for this film. You just go, what, at every turn? And it's baffling. It's almost like a surreal piece of art, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it is... Yeah, it's pretty terrible. I'm sorry. you know, objects, guys. Anyone?
It's a bin.
With a bunch of rubbish in it.
And it should be chucked away, not kept by Rob.
Yeah.
Don't fix the stuff in the bin. It's broken and can't be fixed. Take it to the tip, let it be crushed in the massive car crusher and made into tiny cubes. So it's a bin full of rubbish that talks and tries to tell you how humans love the bin. Jamie, do you have a different one?
I don't know. I don't know if I can top the bin, to be honest.
So it's pretty on the nose.
Yeah, they pretty much just encapsulate it because it's just a big receptacle full of rubbish. It's like where all the discarded ideas for the other films went, and then they just emptied it onto the screen because they had nowhere else to put it.
I know, it's like the junk drawer in the film. At least the junk drawer has a calculator in, but it's just all those objects you keep, those phone chargers for phones you don't own anymore, the stuff you should throw away but have in your house.
The first film, from what I've seen, is, you know, about like how you should appreciate what you have or whatever. The third film is the consequences of being a hoarder.
Yeah.
That's what this film is.
Your child will be abducted if you are this kind of crazy guy.
Yeah.
I suppose, have you
got any, sorry, go on.
I can't think of any specific, but I'm coming in on the angle where it could be some sort of object or toy made specifically for a child, which is fascinating and weird, but essentially has no point.
It's only there to
entertain your child through some sort of menial bouncing or something.
It's one of those action figures that you could buy in a post office in a little Welsh village. It's like Robot Rangers, and it's like a rip-off of Power Rangers, and his head's hollow and pops off if you pull it too hard. It's one of those things.
Okay. I was going to say it's like a little kid's toy. Like, do you know those ones you like? They press buttons and, like, I don't know, you get an animal noise of the corresponding animal or a pop-up or something. But instead of like learning about farmyard animals, you learn about theoretical physics. Only it's written by someone who doesn't know what theoretical physics is. So it's like just pop-ups of quarks and things, and it just makes horrible noises and confuses you and teaches no one anything. Abby, do you have an object to add to the pile of detritus that we've come up with so far?
I thought you'd accepted my car keys, but no.
Oh, no. It has to be a living car keys then, so that it fits with the stupidness. The car keys are fine. It was a very subtle metaphor. I liked it.
No, I'll think of something else. I think it's one of those toys you get that you say it's an action figure or something like that. You expect it to hinge a certain way and to move a certain way, but then you pick it up and it turns out only one of the legs move and the neck's really weird.
Yeah.
Oh, look, my like wrestling action figure can, oh, it can't do any wrestling moves, but it can make a horrible star shape or awkwardly pivot its arms in a way that isn't human. Brilliant. I'll have so much fun.
There is a wrestling one at the moment where they lock hands and spin around the axis of one shoulder. So they just endlessly spin in the ring whilst clinging onto each other for grim life.
Just like actual wrestling.
Only in Norway at all. No, it is it's a terrible film, but don't let me put that, don't let that be a reason we don't do The Brave Little Toaster to the Rescue. It's got animals as well, because it couldn't be bothered to think of new objects. It brings a few objects to life, but apparently animals are the success story of the sequel, where we've got to have cats and rats and tell some story about them, even though I would have thought the whole point is objects coming to life. But whatever. We can still do the second one, right, guys?
If this is the worst of the trilogy, then yeah.
It's worse than the both, but the second one is, well, it might be one to do, but I don't know. I don't want you guys to be like, Rich, we are never doing A Brave Little Toaster again, because I feel like as a podcast we should complete the trilogy. Whatever, I will not let you answer now. We'll put another year and a half or longer like we did between these two, and we'll see how we get on. But for now, does that conclude it?
I think so.
It's
a brilliant film. You all loved it. And it's time to say goodbye.
I'm going to go and beat up my fridge.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.